want to bring in Howard Bryant, friend of ours from ESPN. How you doing, Mr. Bryant?
Mr. Blair, how are you? Stephen, how you doing? Good morning.
We're doing well. We were just talking about, today's the 24th anniversary of Joe Carter's home run. Tomorrow will be the 25th anniversary of the Jays' first World Series win. And, you know, we had an African-American manager with back-to-back World Series wins. Now Dave Roberts goes to the World Series. Should this still be a storyline?
No, absolutely. It should still be a storyline. And the sad part of it is that it should be. You would like to think that it wouldn't be, except for the fact that you have too many numbers that say the opposite, that this is still a novelty. Let's not forget that I always refer to him as the four legs of the table in Major League Baseball, the four most influential, historically important ball clubs in baseball are Dodgers, Yankees, Red Sox, Cardinals. I mean, they're the four. Every sport has its four. And until Dave Roberts was hired, none of those four ever had a black manager.
Mm.
And so if your four most important franchises have never crossed this barrier, it's a story. It's important. And I actually brought this up to Stan Kasten when they'd made the hire. I saw him at the winter meetings in Nashville. And he was incredibly rude to me and very, very dismissive. No, what are you making a big deal about that for? And it was incredibly insulting to me because he was trying to make it seem like something wasn't a big deal when it was. And he tried to dismiss something that you can't dismiss. And I to this day, I remember that exchange and I was thinking, okay, I didn't say this to him and I was really on the tip of my tongue to say it to him was, well, then why do we still make a big deal about Sandy Koufax not pitching on Yom Kippur then?
Mm-hmm.
It does matter. It matters to those groups of people. And for the Red Sox to hire Alex Cora and to have Dave Roberts go to the World Series is a big deal because the Red Sox have only been around since 1901. This is their first minority manager ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so let's not forget that there are reasons why this is the case. I talk about this about the Rooney Rule all the time. If you need rules to encourage or force people to be interviewed, what does it say about those people who have put their lives into this career to not even have an opportunity? We all want to climb. I mean, I think about DeMarlo Hale a couple of years ago when the Jays were doing their thing, and I went up to Toronto and you know, he and I had dinner and he's fallen off the wayside. I don't think he's got an interview this year.
Right.
He hasn't had an interview in years in terms of wanting to get that next job. And one thing to remember, Jeff, about this too, is there's a lot of money at stake here. You go manager money, you go from, you know, coaches making between $75,000 and $150,000. Some of them make a couple hundred thousand if they're on the right coaching staff. You change your life if you get that job. You can go, you know, a couple of $1 million a year. So there's a lot of different considerations to those individual people who need those jobs.
Howard, do you think with the diminishing African American presence in baseball, you know, among the player population, as compared to the National Football League or the National Basketball Association, with, you know, a majority of your player base is African American, has that kind of pushed this issue in baseball a little bit off the front burner? Whether or not that's right or not is a different question. But because you're not looking at a sport where 80% of the athletes are black like you are in basketball and football, and it's an obvious inequity if you don't have African American participation in coaching or general managers' ranks or front offices or ownership. You know, baseball is a white and Latino sport now with a significant Asian population and a diminishing number of African Americans. I'm wondering if that's kind of taken the heat off for some people in terms of that issue.
Well, I think it depends on if you want the truth or not. I mean, if you don't want the truth, then the answer is no. If you do want the truth, and if you want the real perspective from people that would never ever tell you this on the record, black baseball people since Jackie Robinson have been convinced that the game doesn't want them. I've always said this. You go hang out with black ball players, any generation, and they'll tell you they don't want us. They'll also tell you, as the numbers began to decline, and as the numbers began to rise in the late 60s and early 70s, they would tell you, well, that's why we have some of these coaches, and that's why you've got a shot to be a manager, because they need you. they need to control you. So if you don't have any black coaches, how are you going to control the black players? And now that the black players aren't there anymore, they'll also tell you, well, we don't have any black players, so they don't need you now. Mm-hmm. They never wanted you in the first place, and now they don't even need you because the numbers aren't there. This is the truth of how baseball people view this, of how the black baseball people view this. Now, obviously, if you said this to, you know, somebody in the front office, they would deny it, of course, because that's the first reflex. But the numbers do not support them. And because those numbers don't support them, it's a very interesting dynamic that you have in baseball, that it is a white, Latino, Asian, international sport, but its lifeblood is from Jackie Robinson.
Mm.
The history of the game, the importance of the game, when we talk about baseball being what it is, you know, you run through the other four legs of the table. Ruth, Robinson, Ricky, and Landis, if you really want to go that far. And obviously Marvin Miller as well. So it's a weird place that the game is in, because I, you know, you're looking at this going, why is everybody making a big deal about black baseball players when there are no black baseball players? And I made this argument, I think Jeff and I talked about this a bunch of years ago, probably drinking somewhere in Philly, I think it was. They were saying, you know, maybe this is like hockey. Maybe, you know, is it important to have Canadian hockey players if the sport is drifting toward Europe, or if it's drifting closer to the United States, or if it's drifting toward, you know, a different country? Why is it important? And I remember asking baseball people this. Do you need black baseball players in the game if it so turns out that the game is drifting in another direction? And they will all tell you, no, it's very important. We have to have this. This is meaningful. So to which I say, then, if it is meaningful, then do something about it. And that's where baseball is right now. They say this matters. They say retention matters. And that's why this stuff is a big deal.
Yeah, it's, you know, what I find is going to be really interesting as well this offseason. And, you know, I want to talk to you about Dusty Baker in a minute as well. But as far as I know, Delino DeShields, who's managed AAA for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as far as I know, and with the Reds organization, he can't get an interview.
Can't get in. And he's in the Reds system where Brian Price just got re-upped, and they've had three straight 94-loss-win seasons.
Exactly.
94-loss seasons. And so, once again, if you talk to the players and, you know, you either have a couple of cocktails or they'll trust you or whatever, the black people in the game will tell you they don't want us. Mm-hmm. And I remember David Ortiz telling me this one day. We're sitting in the Sox dugout. And he said, I tell the Latino players, the young guys, he says, make as much money as you can in this game and get your black asses out, because they don't want you. And if you look at the numbers in terms of the percentage of Latino players against managing in the front office, mm-hmm. it's even worse than black people. So the game has got to decide what it's going to do with this, because the Division of Labor, I mean, obviously, more and more barriers have gone up to the front office. I mean, you've got to have an Ivy League degree now. They've put all kinds of roadblocks up there
right.
to get those jobs. You know, the days of Dave Stewart and Gord Ash working together, those days are over.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can look at this, and you've got a Division of Labor now that is so stark that there's no denying it.
Howard, how about black consumers? Because I'm wondering if baseball cares about that.
Nobody cares.
Well, but you know, there were places like historically that were legendarily hostile to a black fan. Fenway being number one, right? That if you were
Fenway in Philly, yeah,
just that it was not a place that you would go and feel comfortable, or could go and feel comfortable. But you know, again, when I look at the crowds, they're demographically not representative of the cities in which those teams play. No, it's not even close.
Yeah, it's money. This is the thing. Who spends the money? I mean, we're talking about the NBA, as you were saying earlier, right, and during the lead-in, you're talking about football. You've got to represent with the green. You know, you've got to represent. If you had black season ticket holders that were spending that money, you would have a totally different dynamic, because you'd have to respond to your customer base. That doesn't mean that African Americans don't spend on DirecTV and the season packages and the you know, you see all these black kids walking around in these, you know, in inner cities wearing Dez Bryant jerseys that cost more than my coat. But at the same time, where they, you know, that money is infinitesimal compared to personal seat licenses and season tickets.
I want to talk a little bit about Dusty Baker. Your article on Dusty after Dusty was fired by the Washington Nationals, and just, you know, you clearly, you know, whatever one may think of Dusty's managing, his abilities to manage or whatever, I think in this case it certainly smells like the guy was made a scapegoat for this organization. You know, Dusty's a complex guy for me, because I can think of few people, Howard, I've met in baseball that I like as much, and I can also think of few managers in baseball who sometimes do things that I shake my head at. You know, Joe Maddon does. I get that. But, you know, Dusty, of course, he's never really, I don't think, ever going to live down the knack about a guy who burns out arms and anything. I don't know how much of that is necessarily accurate. I always thought Dusty Baker was just trying to manage to win a game, and you know, that was sort of the extent of his approach. But what happens to Dusty now, and what does it say about a team like the Nationals that you can have the record they've had and get rid of the manager?
Well, it says that you got a bad ownership. It's a bad organization to me. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing it says. It says the first two things that hit me when that happened. One, it wasn't a shock. It was awful, but it wasn't a shock because it's a bad organization. But two, since when did the Washington Nationals become the New York Yankees? That winning lots, you know, when Mike Rizzo says winning lots of games and division titles isn't enough, that is kind of enough, actually. It's what you're supposed to be doing. And when you win those games, then you have a chance to win more games. That's how it works. And the arrogance of that organization, going back to 2012 with Steven Strasburg, and I don't care how many different analytics you throw at me and how many different rationales, Steven Strasburg was healthy enough to pitch in 2012, and you cannot tell me, mm-hmm. you cannot tell me that during that series against the Cardinals and during the postseason, he couldn't have helped at all. That there was no way Steven Strasburg could have helped that team. They had made the decision that he wasn't going to pitch after that shutdown. They had made that decision in February, and they didn't want to back down from it. That's why they did it. And there's a level of arrogance, and the reason why they did it was because they felt that they were set up. We'll be here. Remember Carl Yastrzemski said that a long time ago when the Red Sox lost the 75 World Series to the Reds. I remember he said it hurt, but it didn't hurt that much because we had Rice and we had Lynn and we had Tion and we were good and we were going to be good, and they never got back. Hmm. And so the Nationals, that was the first thing that hit me, was that how do you play with this? And one thing we all know covering sports is you're not cavalier because you may never get back. You may never, ever get back. The next thing when it comes to Dusty is there's a specific category for Dusty Baker. The guy's got 1,863 wins. The guy has had 1,090 win seasons. He hasn't won in the postseason, but I think 7 of those 11 postseasons he's gone to a deciding game, either a 5th or a 7th game, hasn't won. Ron Gardenhire just got a 3-year deal. He's 6-21 in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question, instead of looking at Dusty as confounding as he may be, is why are we always pulling Dusty out? Do you think, is Gibby a great manager? I mean, Gibby does stuff. I mean, I listen to everybody complain about managers. Buck Showalter, the great genius that he is, you know, he left Zach Britton on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Francona has lost 3 straight games to end the season on elimination games 2 years in a row. But Dusty didn't get that one that you need, which is to be a champion. Lou Piniella had a 116-win team and didn't even get to the World Series, but they called Dusty an underperformer. And I can't think of a team that Dusty had that collapsed the way, you know, they compare him to Gene Mock because he and Mock have the most wins without a World Series appearance.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at this in the inverse, and I say, okay, what is he doing that everyone else isn't doing? You know, Terry Francona's 2 great championships were the byproduct of coming back from 0-3 in 0-4 against the Yankees and from 3-1 against Cleveland in 0-7. Dusty hasn't had the luck that you need to get that one. Now, you could make the argument that if he had gotten that one, then he'd be Lou Piniella, because Lou got his first win in 1990, and Lou Piniella has, you know, essentially skated the rest of his career because he won that World Series. Dusty didn't get that. Is it as simple as that, or do we have Dusty rules, where everybody looks at him very differently than they look at everybody else?
Well, just to play devil's advocate for a second, Howard, what's the difference between Dusty being fired and John Farrell being fired? And Farrell won a World Series, except for the fact that we all like Dusty, and some of us don't like John, and some of us don't like John Farrell that much.
There's a gigantic difference, huge difference, and the difference is this: they didn't want John Farrell 2 years ago. They wanted to fire John Farrell, but they couldn't. But the optics were too bad. You can't fire a guy who's got cancer, and then he comes back the next year and makes the playoffs. They had wanted to make that move for a long time. In a way, it's not dissimilar at all, because they really never wanted Dusty. They wanted Bud Black. Mm-hmm. And you've got an organization there that doesn't respect the manager anyway. But I think that the issues, and I think the other issue is too, is stability. Let's not forget that Dusty Baker came into an organization where Jonathan Papelbon was choking Bryce Harper in the dugout on television. And on the other hand, with the Red Sox, John Farrell, whether it was the Pedroia issue, whether it was the Eckersley thing, whether it's David Price being down 0-1 on the road against Houston and not taking the ball, John Farrell was losing that team. There's something going on up there where John Farrell didn't quite have control of that team. And then also, they gave Torey Lovullo manager money to be a bench coach, which tells you the writing had been on the wall on John Farrell for a long time. Dusty, I don't think, did anything to earn that firing. I think they had decided that they didn't want the guy, and I think that they have used this postseason narrative as to say, okay, well, if he doesn't win, then he's gone. They made the decision for him, where I don't think he really earned it, whereas with John Farrell, there's a lot of dysfunction going on in Boston. It wasn't really the right fit. Both of them, in a lot of ways, got the same fate for the wrong reasons, but at least with the Red Sox, if you're really paying close attention to what's going on up there, he let some stuff linger that I think cost him his job.